This podcast is sponsored by the Columbia Association, who reminds you to attend the 6th Annual Dog Day Afternoon, Saturday, April 24th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Hopewell Park in Columbia, where canines and their people will enjoy an afternoon of contests, treats, activities, and lots of tail-wagging fun. CA also reminds you that village elections are held Saturday, April 21st. For specific information about a particular village's elections, visit columbiavillages.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by today's guest, Gene Parker, the general manager of Meriwether Post Pavilion. But as always, we first like to take a look at some of the stories making the headlines this week. We got a lot of stories this week, Dennis.
We had an election. While you were out in the Grand Canyon, I assume you voted by absentee ballot or...
I did.
Or did early vote.
I did absentee ballot.
They may have counted them by now, because actually the absentee ballots could make a difference in this race, because there are 14 candidates for six spots in the Board of Elections, Board of Education primary. And the sixth spot, Bob Ballinger is currently holding it, but former board member Patricia Gordon, I think, was right on the bubble. There's like 200 votes.
Bob, you got my vote.
Bobby got your vote?
Bob got my vote.
Bob was kind of the darling of the Republicans. He's like the Republican, even though it was a nonpartisan race. It seems like the Republicans kind of rally behind
him.
You
know what? I just like Bob. I think he's a good guy.
Bob's a good guy.
Good perspective.
He's a good guy.
So Alan's out.
But the big news was Alan Dyer is out. The voters spoke before the board could have him impeached. I don't know how I feel about this. The board apparently is going to go ahead with the impeachment.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems like a great use of taxpayer dollars.
I don't know whether it's just because the ball's already rolled. I don't know. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. I mean, he's done.
So, meaning they're going to try to get him ousted before the November election?
Yeah. Because I guess the hearing's set for May or June or something like that.
And he's going to be a lame duck anyway.
What's the point?
Well, I guess he could make a lot of trouble if he wanted to. But
he's one vote out of seven, right?
Right.
I don't get it. But whatever, I'm sure
Well, we've spoken about this before anyway. You know what? I've got mixed feelings about whether they should be pursuing this anyway, because the people have spoken and they put him into office. And
well, a lot of people feel that way. The election solved the issue, and
right.
Yeah, it was
the system worked.
The system worked. You know, even with one of the lowest voter turnouts. I mean, historically low. I think they said in Howard County one of the lowest that most people can remember.
Right.
And you know, you kind of thought maybe the Dyer factor would help get more people out. But, you know, again, it's the school board and not enough people pay attention, which they should, as we all know. I should mention, though, the other candidates have prevailed. So the top vote getter was Janet Siddiqui, incumbent. But the second top vote getter was Ann DeLacy. Ann is a former president of the Howard County Teachers Union, the Howard County Education Association.
And a teacher herself.
And a teacher herself. A long time been involved in education issues in Howard County.
Pretty union girl.
Definitely a union girl and supported by the union. The union chose not to endorse any incumbents. Now, you know, you can always say, well, I can understand why they wouldn't endorse Dyer, but some of my folks have told me that they were secretly supporting Dyer. I don't know why, you know, why they would do that, but it'll be interesting to see how that... I mean, we're going to have the union president on as our next guest on this show.
Well, with the survey that they took recently and the 77%, I guess, of those who responded to the survey, the teacher survey, said that they actually were confident in the board's work.
No,
last year.
It was 60%.
And that went
60%.
Down,
yeah.
Right, and
yeah,
that went down to 60%.
Right.
So it's a 17% drop. And I guess maybe they felt that that was enough to support someone who was a... I don't know, somebody who challenged the institution and kind of did things a little bit differently.
Yeah, great. Another rock thrower like Alan Dyer, just what we want on the board. You know, we talk about this dysfunction. Now, you know, they want Ann DeLacy in there, who says she'll throw some rocks. Well, you know what? I want people that will collaborate for the betterment of our students and the betterment of the system. Rock throwers, no.
One of the things, just kind of a side note, that I thought was interesting was the lowest approval rating came from middle school teachers.
Yeah, well, that was a big issue.
And, you know, I think it's
funny.
The
reading, yeah.
And the timing of it with the whole issue about reading and how teachers right now are very unhappy with reading having been eliminated from the curriculum. And they're traditionally, apparently, the lowest scoring teachers anyway, because it's tough to be a teacher in middle school.
Middle school's tough.
But I thought it was interesting that the timing of that was such that...
And you know, this whole thing, you know, they endorsed three candidates. Well, they could have endorsed two incumbents and Ann DeLacy. Ann DeLacy was almost a given for the union. She's a former president. So, sure, they're going to endorse her. She's their person. But the other two, you know, they're saying, well, you know, there's this 17-point drop in approval rating. But it was still 60% approval rating of the teachers that were surveyed still had confidence in the board. That's a majority.
I bet Obama would love an approval rating like
that
right now.
How do you not support the incumbents when you have a majority? Well, again, without belaboring that, we will have Mr. Lemley. Paul Lemley has agreed to join us on our next show. Oh,
and we have a new superintendent.
We have a new superintendent. Ms. Foos, Renee A. Foos, from Baltimore County. And that was a crazy... Did that happen right before you left?
Yeah.
That was a wild process, wasn't it? Well, we're going to have a public meeting and introduce the two final candidates. And by midnight, they made their selection. I mean, but apparently that's the way it is with good candidates for...
I think it says a lot about Maryland's education system that we did a nationwide search, and here we ended up with a superintendent that... previously worked 20 miles down the road.
Yeah, we did.
Coming from Baltimore County.
And, you know, there were two final candidates. One was, I can't remember his first name, Mr. Dance from Houston. He was in the Houston school system. But that guy's 30 years old. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's a very capable administrator.
He's not seasoned like you.
Yeah, I like a guy with at least a little couple streaks of white in his hair, you know.
I've gotten a few.
Yeah. They're more on their way, too.
I can imagine. All right, moving on to the Maryland legislature. They adjourned last night, having not finished their work.
What do you call it? Sin dying?
Yeah, that's something like that. It's Latin, and I didn't take Latin, so I'm going to let you run with that one. You know, I can't remember who at lunch made the point, but I think it's fascinating. Here we live in probably one of the most democratic states in the union, where we have absolutely a one-party system.
Absolutely, one-party system.
And they, in this one-party system, are completely incapable of passing a budget in the 90 days that's given to them to do it.
It's unbelievable. You know,
What? Shame on every damn one of them.
But you know what's funny, too, is did they pass gay marriage, though? Boy, they got that one done real quick.
Like that.
You know?
Jumped right on it. And they spent a lot of time on other things. You actually had a story about the arsenic and chicken. I mean, they found the time to outlaw arsenic and chicken, even though it's been done by the private sector years ago,
yeah,
right?
I love the story. Yeah, so they've... In Maryland, it's now illegal to put arsenic in chicken feed. Doesn't that make us all feel better? But apparently, Pfizer stopped putting it in their feed 2 years ago. So it's like closing the barn door after the animals are all out. So.
And I thought of one earlier in the day, and I can't remember what it was. But there's other legislation that's of equal importance that they spent a lot of time on to the detriment of getting a budget passed.
Yeah, you know, and they talked about wind farms and flush tax. I mean, a lot of the tax initiatives didn't get me. We don't have a gas tax. We don't have a flush tax. But I will say, I am happy to see his wind farm died again.
Right.
As a friend of mine who's an energy consultant said, wind energy blows. You know, again, there's a guy who knows. So anyway.
All right. So I just to be clear, the members of the General Assembly last night did adjourn.
They did.
And they did pass
a capital budget.
A $35.6 billion balanced budget, as they were required to.
Yes.
Okay. However, it's known as the doomsday budget, which contains, I think, some $512 million of additional cuts.
So they automatically...
Much of which are to education. If, in fact, Governor O'Malley does not now call a special session, bring them all back to address tax increases that really never got the serious consideration he thinks they should have to, in fact, balance the budget. So it's somewhat of a farce.
But here's the crazy bit. Here's why they're going to come back, though. They're going to come back in special session not because of the budget, but because they haven't resolved the gambling issue. And that's what they're going to talk. You know, that's the hot button. I mean, Baltimore doesn't want any competition for a downtown casino. Cordish doesn't want any competition for his Arundel Mills casino. And the developers down in Arundel Mills are down at National Harbor in Prince George's County saying, wait a minute, this is an important thing for Prince George's County. We want casinos down here, too.
Right, but did anyone really think that it was going to stop at casinos at a limited number of locations?
Oh, my God. It'll never be more than slots. Now we need table games to compete with other states. You know, please. Just stop.
Just, right. It's a slippery slope. All of these things are a slippery slope.
You know, and they
just
wonder why we don't have confidence in what goes on in Annapolis. But as Tom Cole pointed out on his blog this morning, he says the problem with the special session is that there's no fundraising limitations on the delegates and the senators during a special session. They can go out. They can't raise money during a regular session. But a special session, they can. So the lobbyists can open up their wallets on the gambling side, and you can just it can get real ugly. And I suspect.
And what does it cost a day to continue in special session down there? You know, talking about wasting tax dollars.
Oh, absolutely. You
know, it's crazy.
They should all be fired.
The other thing that died in the legislature this session was a bill that we talked about in a prior show. And this has to do with the roundabouts and the ability of private citizens to put American flags in the roundabouts.
Yeah, this is a Howard County bill. I mean, it is a
Howard County
bill. The Woodbine bill.
And you know, this is an interesting issue to me because I'm a patriot at heart. And I believe in the American flag. I believe in paying respect to
you
the
wear
people.
An American flag upside down in your lapel, don't you?
Yeah, every day I do. And you know what? And I think people should be able to celebrate the success of our country and celebrate the work of our troops.
Right.
But you know what? And I'm all about property rights. This property doesn't belong to the Winkler family. This belongs to the State Highway Administration. And the State Highway Administration should have the right to determine how its property is used exactly the same way as the Winklers and everyone else in Howard County and across the country should be able to determine how they use their own property.
And in defense of the SHA, let me tell you, having worked with these guys, safety first is there. And they try to envision worst-case scenarios. So for them, a flagpole on a concrete base in the middle of a traffic island is a barrier that could cause a very serious damage or perhaps injury to somebody running into it. And that's their concern. So
I get that.
I get that loud and clear. And then that's why they didn't allow it. And
now, if they're that concerned about safety, they ought to come down to Homewood and Folly Quarter down there. Yeah. And there's a circle down there that has more real estate signs on it in a weekend than there are blades of grass.
Well, you know, it's important for realtors to get their
signs. It is.
So I'm not going to touch that.
You already did. Healthy Howard's in the news.
Healthy Howard is in the news. I mean, you know, well, first of all, Ken and Peter. Ken Ullman and Peter
Bielenson
had an op-ed in the Sun Papers this past Sunday suggesting that if the Affordable Care Act gets thrown out by the Supreme Court, then Healthy Howard is a good model. It's hard to argue with, but I mean, they're certainly
it's hard to argue with. Let's call Greg Fox.
well, mainly because I don't think anybody knows what the full impact of the Affordable Care Act will be until it's in place. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, to credit where credit's due, as I've been critical of Healthy Howard, but they were out front with it, and so now they're kind of basking in that a little bit. You're not saying
right,
a word.
But
of course, they're taking credit because the latest, I don't know who does these things, but they've determined that Howard County is once again the healthiest county in the state of Maryland.
Shocking.
Richest county. Smallest county population-wise.
Best sports county.
It's not hard to get there.
No, it's not. So the Howard County Legislature, our county council, has been at work as well. We had previously talked about that inn on Route 108 that nobody can pronounce, St. Paralina, as you like to call it. So they did finally resolve that issue. They did pass a bill to create a special exception or conditional use for guest houses.
A guest house.
Now, the original idea was boutique hotels.
Yes.
And we've all laughed about what that exactly means. But Mary Kay didn't like boutique hotels. And
she felt
that a guest house was more in keeping with the character of an R12 zone, kind of a residential neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so they worked to work with the neighbors to get them to agree to pass this bill for guest houses, which would limit the outdoor activities somewhat.
Oh, okay.
Which made the neighbors happy.
Yeah.
It's also going to limit trash collection. It's not going to be quite as frequent. So not going to be that lady that you keep talking about.
So instead of hearing the garbage truck, she'll put up with the smell of trash that hasn't been picked up for 3 days.
But she's outside walking in her nightgown. Right. So. And then the other thing that came out of the county council this last week was the two-tier tax.
Yeah, you know, for the fire tax.
Right. So Howard County was, I think, the only county remaining in the state that had multi-tiered tax.
Right.
And the theory was that the western, more rural part of the county, where there are more volunteers, they like to accept donations for the volunteers for that.
To help fund their fire.
Right, exactly. And more the eastern section doesn't have as many in the,
volunteers. Right.
So there was this divisive sort of approach to the whole thing. And the county, and I think rightly so, decided, you know what, all services are equal to all people in the community. So we're going to have a single-tier tax.
And the fire department is one fire department. It's not two fire departments. It's all, you know.
Right.
It's
the same. Police department's the same. So, Greg Fox did vote against that. I think the remaining members of the council voted for it.
And there was only one of the rural fire companies was really only against it. The majority of the rural fire companies were supportive of it. But Lisbon, they held out to the end and fought. But you know what? In the end, it was passed. And I think it was the right thing.
Probably the right thing to do.
Yeah, probably the right thing to do.
I agree.
CA. Since we're on governments, our quasi-government that runs
and Columbia. Our sponsor.
Yeah. And our sponsor. Our sponsor would like you to remember that April 21st is CA Voting Day. Now, it's hard to get excited about elections where there aren't many contested seats. But they're important. They're important for the people that do serve in those roles, to go out and support them and to vote for them. The villages are actually challenged. They've got to get a quorum to vote in order for these elections to be validated. So even though there aren't contested elections, people should get out and vote. Actually, there is one contested election for the Columbia Council. In the village of Harper's Choice, long-serving... council representative Cindy Coyle. I think she started serving on the council when I was in elementary school.
That was the same year that you went to see The Who.
Same year I went to see The Who. She is not one of my, you might gather by some of my comments and my tone of my voice, she's not one of my favorite Columbia Council representatives. She has a challenger. Robert Fontaine, an attorney. Don't hold it against him. But, you know, it's a good.
Now, do you know the guy?
I do not know the guy. Would like to meet him. He is out there campaigning. So in Harper's Choice, at least, you've got some turnout. But Columbia Association, they really want people to pay attention to stuff and want people to get out those polls. So if you're a resident of Columbia, live in one of these villages, April 21st is your voting day. Get up to speed. You know, go out there. Meet some neighbors. Go to your local village community center. Vote. Talk to some neighbors. Find out about what both your village board is doing and what your Columbia Council rep is doing. And you'll be a better resident of Columbia for it. And there's a lot of reasons for it. Well, I should say another word from our sponsor. It's not all just serious stuff on CA this month. CA is also having a dog day afternoon. I don't really want to combine that with elections because we don't want to think Saturday of election day, dog day afternoon. But I'm a big fan of dogs. And CA is having a dog day at the Hopewell Park.
They're doing lots of cool stuff.
Yeah, and it's the same day as election day, as it turns out. They're doing lots of cool stuff. What was it? The best bone chewer? Best kisser?
Tail wagger.
Yeah, a lot of fun. You know,
it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, bring your dog. It's 11 to 2. It's at the Hopewell Park. You know, the Wine Bin in Ellicott City does a yappy hour once in a while. It's fun to get the dogs around each other, and vendors come in to show their wares. And it's nice to see this happening in Columbia too. And I applaud the Columbia Association for doing something on behalf of all the Columbia dog lovers. So Dog Day afternoon, April 21st, 11 to 2 in Hopewell Park. Let me see what else we got on CA. Oh, yes. The pools. Because we're getting near pool season. Apparently, they had a straw vote to try to, you know.
So they had a retreat.
Well, they had this whole, they did an aquatics master plan.
Right.
That they studied this problem ad infinitum. Now, the problem is that Columbia has some pools that get used a lot and some pools that hardly get used at all. And as we know, it costs the same to maintain and open and run an underused pool as it does to a heavily used pool.
And look, with them being so close to one another, people are obviously going to go to those pools that are better maintained, they're newer, they've got newer amenities.
Right.
So it's easy for people to go
They hop in the car or minibus or whatever, they get over to the other pool. But this brought up some of those old issues that are very deeply ingrained in Columbia of The pools don't have to make money. They're there as a service to the neighborhood. They're an important part of the Columbia vision. The vision of Columbia, where everyone is happy and the sky is always blue and there's always a pool to swim in and a village center has a grocery store.
That was Rouse's vision, you know.
I suppose. But anyway, they had a straw vote after all this, and none of the existing board members want to close the pools. So I don't think any pools are going to close this year.
Interesting how that plays out.
Yeah.
Speaking up of your yappy hours, you're going to have another place to have a yappy hour.
Yeah. The old
Rostreel Ale House?
Yeah. The old Rocky Run Tap House over in Dobbin Road is going to be reborn by the, it's going to be, actually, the people that run the Pratt Street Ale House down in Baltimore, I think they're going to call it the Columbia Ale House.
At
least that's a working name. Yeah, at least that's a working name. I found out about it through Houchow's blog. Very excited. It's a great place for them. That's going to be a real interesting area of Columbia to watch, you know, with Wegmans coming just down the road from that. Starbucks has now moved into a new location. I understand that Potbelly Sandwiches is taking over the old Starbucks location on Dobbin Road. Lots happening over on Dobbin. Now, if we could only get that chain link fence down on the Columbia Auto Park, we'd be in good shape.
How do you really feel about that?
One step forward, two steps back. But I guess the big story in Columbia with food. Stores, yeah, food is it,
the, Whole Foods.
Whole Foods, disappointing.
So yeah, this was the biggest, worst kept secret in Howard County for months and months and months and months.
Months.
I'd be like, how did you find out about it? Well, everyone knows, you know.
Yeah, right.
Come on, really?
Really?
And of course, we're talking about Howard Hughes Corporation trying to get Whole Foods Markets to come in to the old
former
Howard Hughes Corporation building.
Right.
And they've been working on this for months and months and months, months and months.
Months.
And it's dead.
Dead. Whole Foods has walked. It's back to square one. Now, as somebody who's from Howard County, I think this would have been a great plum for Columbia. And I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in Whole Foods. I think they missed a great opportunity. I think they would have done great there.
And as this article by Kevin Rector suggested, they're a well-known food chain, and they really can pick and choose whatever location they want.
They can.
And you know what? They made a determination that this wasn't the right place. And I got to tell you, we've talked about this before. With the time it takes for stuff to get done in Howard County, and the time it's taking to get stuff done in town center, I, too, as an incoming business, would be concerned about the ability to get my return on investment. I really would.
Well, it's not only that, but, you know, it's an expensive building. And I'm sure that factored into the deal, too. I mean,
it's actually almost 150,000 square foot building that has 13 employees working in it.
Plenty of room to move around, but it's going to
go figure the per head cost on that.
Yeah, well, but to fix the building up, to get it back up to speed, it's going to cost about $20 million. I mean, that's a lot of money in that building.
If it wasn't the building that it is, it would probably be more worthwhile to just raise the building and start from scratch.
You would tear it down. As a developer, I would look at that and say, land's worth more than the building, tear it down, and we'll start all over again. But you can't do that.
Right.
Actually, I think part of the town center legislation says that they have to preserve that building. So.
And then finally, if I may, on a somewhat personal note, I want to give kudos to a woman by the name of Jean Kozlowski.
Memory
ball. The mother of one of my best friends from growing up, and her husband, Craig Kozlowski, died of Alzheimer's back in October. And he had been suffering with Alzheimer's for 14 years. He had a very early onset of it. I think he was 54.
Wow, that's early.
When he was diagnosed with it.
Mm-mm-mm.
And after a very long battle, he did die back in October. And Jean is now dancing in the memory ball.
Yeah.
It's sort of a...
where will that be held?
It's going to be, I believe, downtown at the Waterfront Marriott.
Okay.
And it's sort of like Dancing with the Stars. You get a star.
Now you said downtown.
Downtown Baltimore.
Baltimore. Okay, I just want to make sure I got that.
As opposed to town center.
Just make sure I get that correct.
I apologize.
Downtown's got a whole new connotation.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're going, whoa, we have a Marriott downtown? Anyway, she's going to be dancing for Alzheimer's research at the Memory Ball this weekend.
Wow.
And I just want to give a plug for her and her work in fighting this horrible disease that took her husband and the father of her two kids.
And actually, one other thing I forgot to bring up when we were talking about Howard Hughes and Town Center was Bridge Columbia. You know, Bridge Columbia is a grassroots effort to replace the pedestrian bridge that connects Oakland Mills with Town Center, or downtown. And, you know, there's a group that our producer is actually involved in that has come up with a design of a bridge that would not only handle pedestrian traffic, but would be a It'll be multimodal. It'll also, not regular cars, but it would handle transit, buses and stuff to go across. And would kind of open up Oakland Mills to the whole town center area. Well, they want to get this thing teed up with enough studies and engineering done so that when the opportunity arises, if there's some extra funds available, they can get this thing funded and move it forward. And to that end, Howard Hughes has put $500,000 into the effort. And now the county has ponied up another $100,000 in Ken Allman's capital budget. So kudos to Ken for seeing the importance of that. It's a huge benefit to Oakland Mills.
And it's something I think our guest Gene would appreciate as well for from the perspective of Meriwether, because it helps create foot traffic from that part of Columbia.
I mean, think of it even this way. If you live in Oakland Mills and you're going to a concert at Meriwether, you could easily walk over now or ride your bike, you know, with this bridge. You could do that now, but the current bridge leaves a lot to be desired.
All right. And now joining us is our guest for today, Gene Parker, the general manager of Meriwether Post Pavilion. Welcome. Gene, welcome.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
We were just talking. You were our 14th guest.
Oh, I feel honored.
Almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, almost
oh, no,
years.
We're honored to have you.
Yes, we're honored to have lots of happened with Meriwether. We should tell who Gene Parker is in case somebody missed
the first. Well, I said she's the general manager of Meriwether.
I'm sorry. You know,
we can describe what general managers are.
the chief cook and bottle washer.
That's right.
Yeah, I can do that too.
Yeah.
So when we had you on initially, it's been almost 2 years. I think it was May of 2010. And I know we had talked then about some of the changes and renovations that had taken place at Meriwether. And here we are 2 years later. And obviously, Howard Hughes has changed. The whole mood and dynamic of the company has gone through some transition.
It was general growth back when we were.
It was general growth. Absolutely.
So how has all that impacted what's currently going on at Meriwether?
It's actually been very positive. You know, the roles have changed in terms of who we deal with on a day-to-day basis. But the transition for us has been, you know, very, very smooth.
Now, they've got a big program they're developing for Meriwether, correct? A redevelopment program?
In terms of the final redevelopmental phase of Town Center. Article 58 and 59, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
Discussed May 13th, 2004 at the Charette. You
know? Right, because part of the deal is for them to give Meriwether a makeover, correct?
Yeah, I don't know, like, who the they and, you know, what the actual...
Well, it's still owned by Howard Hughes, correct?
Our landlord is Howard Hughes.
Yeah.
In terms of the... My headset keeps falling, that's why I keep playing with it. But that's okay.
We could staple that on.
Yeah. That could work. Duct tape always is a good option.
Yeah, we have that too.
We use a lot of duct tape up at Meriwether. You know, in terms of who's paying for what and so on and so forth, that's all to be determined and to be seen. But yeah, those two articles I know go and outline things that need to be done at the pavilion to give it the makeover that it needs. Because really, we have a building that's very, very old.
It's 40-some years old.
It was opened in 1967, I guess. So
give us the flavor of what are some of the things on the agenda that are going to happen that people are actually going to see, and what's the timing of it?
Yeah.
Oh, the timing of it. Who knows what
everyone
the timing
wants to know
of it
when,
is. Yeah, we want to know when, too.
Well,
so
it's not
you guys figure it out, you tell me.
Well, it certainly wouldn't happen this summer, because you wouldn't do it when you were in season.
No, I mean, ideally, in a perfect world, part of the... what's being bannered around is to be able to have our season, whenever that is, and it ends. The season ends, and then the construction/renovations happens during the off season. I mean, if we had a winter like we just had, it would have been easy.
You work all winter.
Yeah, you end in September, you start construction, you know, whatever dirt needs to be moved around, and you know, end of September, October, and then you know, your construction starts and happens, and then you're open again. You know, hopefully by May. You know, early June the next year. I mean, we have shows now that start as early as middle of April. Our first show this year is April 28th. We have opened as early as April 6th. And then we've gone as late as towards the end of October.
Yeah, that gets late in the season.
So, I mean,
it's a little cold.
But people go to football games and baseball games, you know, those two sporting things when it's cold out and it's
sometimes
no big
music's
deal.
Different. And it just feels like it's something you do when it's warm out.
You do when it's warm out, yeah.
So what are the kinds of things that are going to happen once this renovation does take place?
Well, that's all part of the discussion that's going on right now. I mean, there's, you know, land issues in terms of the space that Meriwether leases, which is a little bit over 10 acres. We need to make sure we have enough space to expand and do what we need to do.
And parking is, I'm sure, is a concern.
Parking is a concern. I mean, fortunately, there are a lot of options for shared use parking.
Sure, sure, because your parking will be off peak of when offices use their parking.
Right. Most of the time. And I mean, and you know, somehow or the other, magically, when 4th of July happens every year, there's 100,000 people which, you know, migrate upon, and they do park somewhere.
Yep, they park somewhere.
So we are never anywhere near 100,000 people, and it's rare when we get to a full capacity sellout crowd. I mean, the Pavilion sells out a lot.
Now, sellout crowd is how many tickets to you?
A sellout crowd is 19,000.
19,000.
That's our capacity.
That's about how many friends you have.
A little bit over 19,000.
Well, you know,
that's how many Facebook friends you have, I hear.
Well, yeah. You know,
and that's not even all of us friends.
Yeah, oh.
But we can help you get
those
there.
Those are your close friends.
I have an idea for getting you up the...
all about the social media.
You know, back in the day, I was in high school when The Who played at Merriweather. And they had like 23,000 people back then. That was a lot. So 19,000 sounds about right.
I'm not even sure that there were that many people in Columbia
then.
Say,
that exceeded the entire population of Columbia.
Maybe even of Howard County at the time.
Yeah, it might have. No, it went that far. Well, yeah, it was a while ago. When they do this, do you have a wish list of things that you'd like to see done to the place that after? Because you've been there how many years now?
I've been there.
When The Who played?
Not quite when The Who played. Probably about 10 years after The Who. I've been there since.
I saw you at that concert.
I didn't see you.
I'm surprised you remember anything from that concert.
Well, I'm impressed. 1977.
1977.
Yep.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, I've never seen The Who, though. But.
So what would you like to see, for personally, you know, if it was, you had your druthers, what's one thing you'd like to see done there?
Well, from a production standpoint, there's a lot of things that we need because the theater itself, the ceiling needs to be raised. I mean, that's one thing. If we could do just one thing, it would raise the roof. Just to help with production in terms of rigging sound, rigging lights, the videos that come with many the artists nowadays, and it's not just the big rock groups, but even the, you know, the big country artists.
Yeah, they've got the video screens.
Oh, yeah, and it's a big part of their
better
show.
Better for the people in the lawn seats.
And it's a huge part of, you know, their atmosphere and their show. Mm-hmm. But if we could raise the roof, that would be good. Expanding the proscenium opening. Right now, our proscenium opening is subpar to many of the other venues. But despite the technical challenges that we have, because of our location, being right off of 29, easy access to and from 95.
Between two major cities.
Between two major metropolitan areas, there's like 8 million people to market to. A lot of them are your Facebook friends.
All three of them?
Yeah, all three of them.
So how has some of the inadequacies of Merriweather affected your ability to bring in artists?
You know what's interesting? That's a really good question. We can go back to the early 70s when, at the time, the Nederlanders were trying to book, guess who? Tom Jones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And what they did back then in order to get Tom Jones, because even then it was inadequate, they put on those side areas.
Side wings.
The side wings called the loges, uh-huh, which are under those canvas tents even still to this day.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I can recall in the early days, too, those canvas tents. There's only one company that makes a tent like that.
Yeah, they're out in Chicago.
Out in Chicago.
And there's certain, yeah.
It's not easy to get a tent made from them.
No, it's not at all. But they do
Dennis
a great job.
Dennis had a party
job
at his house one day. He needed one of those because of all of his friends.
Because of
again, my history of Merriweather goes back a long ways. But there was one season where they got late in ordering the new, because they go, canvas wears out after some years.
Yeah, it's like 4 to 5, 6 years if you're lucky.
Right. And they got late and ordered it 1 year. They only were able to, the tent company was only able to get half the tent on, but it doesn't work that way because the cables on one half support the other half.
Right.
So the other half just had open cables and no roof on it one season.
No roof.
but that's just the way it goes. Anyway, we used to laugh about Omar the tent maker up in Chicago is the only guy that makes those tents.
Yeah, I think it's Anchor Industries or something like that, but it's out there.
One guy in the country makes that tent.
And actually, you know, back to what you said, too, about how has it impacted us. Green Day, back in 2005, we weren't able to get the show until we completely expanded our pit area.
Wow.
Yeah, so our pit area
Because
had,
they have a big lot of kids in the mosh pit.
They want all the people down front just so they can feel their fans close to them. It just becomes
real. I know
how
that is. We like that with our podcast.
Yeah, you like to have everybody just kind of sitting around you. You know, but Lefter Giselle did the same thing back in the heyday, back in University of Maryland.
Yeah.
He pulled all his, you know, all the seats close to the floor so the players could feel the fans.
Yeah. And I should say, we have actually more people watching our show today than usual.
Than last week.
We have a lot of people here today.
Yeah, I see them all around. They're like...
Go ahead, Paul. You were going to ask something when I interrupted on my tent.
No, that's okay. So following up. So
raise the roof.
There have been things that you've had to do to get talent. Is there some talent that you simply haven't been able to get because the venue's not big enough, or the dressing rooms or the ceilings aren't high enough in the back, and it's really just precluded you from being able to make the deal?
Some of the bands which are going out on tour to be like a stadium type show.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's issues with those because, you know...
You can't do U2.
Right. Can't do U2. You know, Zach Brown Band, for instance, is a band
Love
that's playing...
Love the Zach Brown
Oh, they're awesome.
Love
yeah,
the
I'd
Zach
go
Brown
buy a ticket to that show if I wasn't working that show on May 31st. That's going to definitely sell out. But there were some production issues with that, but we were able to work around that. You know, we can get real creative because right. I've been there a long time. Brad's been there almost just as long. He's our production manager. And we can get real creative with
You've
the
learned
artist
how to do and, workarounds.
Yeah, and you know you have to be able to get their production people on the line. You put your heads together, and you come up with a solution. Mm. So,
you know. Well, one of the things Paul was asking at lunch. I mean, how does Merriweather rank in as far as regional facilities? I mean, when artists come to the area and they look at the different venues that are available for them to perform at, how does Merriweather stack up against the other venues in the area?
Well, in the past, let's say 10 seasons. I think at least half of those, Merriweather was nominated as one of the best amphitheaters in the country.
Wow.
So, and a lot of that
Congratulations.
Has...
Congratulations.
Well,
awesome.
A lot of it has to do with Seth. You know, my boss, Seth Hurwitz, yeah. who owns the 930 Club and does a lot of promoting in and out of D.C., and he is the owner-operator of It's My Amphitheater, which is the company which owns...
IMP, right?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Has the contract on the venue now. He's done just a great job in terms of, you know, putting the venue's money back into the facility in terms of the capital improvements. You know, he's got the sculptures there. He's got the, you know, the different types of landscaping. Even though our facility is great because of all the trees, which makes us unique and different from all the steel behemoths that have been built in the past 12 years.
Yeah.
You know, the setting's real nice.
No, I think Seth has done he's done a magnificent job.
He's done a great job. And when he first got into the building, you know, one of his main things was booking Dave Matthews Band, and everyone's like, oh, Merriweather's never going to get Dave Matthews Band. Well, guess what? He got Dave Matthews Band.
He made it happen.
He did make it happen. So he has lofty goals a lot of times, but, you know, he does amazing things and surmounts a bunch of hurdles and has come, you know, a long way with the venue. And
so we stack up pretty well.
We stack up great. You know, Merriweather, even though it's old, it does wonderfully. The acts love coming in and out of here. We treat them all very special. We even treat, you know, we've got a bunch of different customers. You know, the artist is our customer. The people who buy our VIP season seats are our customers. You know, and obviously the people who buy the tickets are the customers, too. Mm-hmm. And we treat them very well.
A lot of people to service.
A lot of people to service. You know, and we want them to come back. We want them to come back with all their friends.
You know, I made a joke about you, too, at Stadium Band, but you got the Beach Boys coming.
Beach Boys are coming. 50th anniversary tour.
That's a big show for
June 15th.
I mean, they've been there in the way, way past.
Yeah, but they haven't been back in a while.
But they're a stadium act.
So they
Or they have been.
They have been.
In their heyday.
But they're legendary.
They are.
And they're definitely a great, great
Has that sold out?
Not yet. No, but it's doing good. Sarah McLachlan's coming in with the National Philharmonic. That's going to do fine. That's a nice show to have.
Yeah. Now, talk to me about festivals. Festivals seem to be sort of a new up-and-coming concept that seemed to be taking up a lot of dates at Merriweather.
I mean, we just got our tickets for M3.
Did Oh, yeah. There you go.
That's my style.
That's your style.
That's my style.
Not quite the Who, but...
I'm in the Who.
You know, the metal
days. Def Leppard. I don't want to miss them.
Def Leppard will be good, too. Festivals are just a way, you know, the competition in our business is very, very tough.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that we've been able to effectively combat that competition is by doing a lot of these self-created festivals. And the self-created festivals are what, I mean, it's what we call a two-meal day, you know, where you have people there for lunch and for dinner. And anytime you can book a band where it's a two-meal day, that's very,
now,
very good.
Is the dinner meal liquid, or is it actually solid?
Depends
very good
on
question. That's a whole other conversation.
Depends about who's in the audience.
Anheuser-Busch likes it to be very liquid.
Liquid dinner.
Our security staff, not so much.
Going back to the summer schedule, when Paul was talking about festivals, Virgin Fest, is that on the...
Hopefully.
So you don't know yet?
We don't know yet. I mean, we're hopeful.
How does that work? Richard Branson calls you up, says, we're ready to come back. Or,
yeah, sure. He just picks up the phone during breakfast and says,
hey, Gene, what's up?
Yeah, there you go.
The Gene.
He's not quite a Facebook friend of mine yet, but maybe he is yours.
He is. We're tight.
You're tight. Yeah, that's a whole big process, because with Virgin, that's a free event, obviously. And Virgin is a huge sponsor of that, but then they have their whole arsenal of sponsors too, and it's just a matter of who is going to ante up. Recently the economy has been such that a lot of sponsors aren't doing what they used to do. They might not be funding symphonies as much. But, for the business that we've got, where we are bringing in a lot of people, there's a lot of eyeballs to market to,
right.
You know, a lot of specific genres, you know, the sponsorships have been doing okay.
So how has the economy over the last couple of years impacted your industry?
We've been very fortunate, and I bring it back to the days of the Depression. When the Depression happened, late 1920s, the two industries that survived
movies
were correct. It was women's cosmetics, alcohol, unfortunately, of course, and live entertainment.
Yeah.
And so it really wasn't so much the movies, but it's the live entertainment. And people will pay for live entertainment. So, you can almost say it's recession-proof. People still need to dig deep into their pockets for the tickets. But we've been very, very lucky. We've been very, very fortunate. And, having Seth around, really creative, he makes us think out of the box and be creative, too. And doing these self-created festivals, they've helped us out a lot.
So the Capital Jazz Fest is also self-created?
That's actually one. There is a person out of Capital Jazz Productions. It's his company, and he does these three events a year. And
that's been going on in Merriweather for a while,
Jazz.
Too, right?
Right, yeah. He's had the event elsewhere, but for the past, 12 years or so, it's been at Merriweather, and it's been doing, it does great.
It's awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, Gene, sounds like you had a lot of exciting things coming up this year. We wish you a successful season.
Well, thank you.
Appreciate you coming by today.
I did want to ask, because one local blogger, his name escapes me, but he writes a blog.
See, this is what I'm talking about him being a big deal. My producer says, wrap it up. Dennis says, no, we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, it's because but I think it's an important point. Some people out there have made comments that the schedule doesn't look that great so far. But it's early, right?
For 2012?
Yeah. You've got a lot to go.
Yeah, because
we got a ton booked already for this.
Yeah, we're getting the exact opposite. First of all, this is the first year ever that we ever put a show on sale in December.
Really?
Yeah, we had Foster the People, which is coming here June 10th.
And Beach Boys you had pretty early, too.
Beach Boys was early. And if you look at our schedule now, it goes through the middle of July. We still have half of July, all of August, all of September to book. This is, we're about halfway done.
Anybody that's not on the website that you can tell about?
I know about them, but I can't talk about them.
I had to ask.
Stay tuned. Go to www.merriweathermusic.com.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Gene.
Now I'm done.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gene.
Thanks for having me.
That about wraps up yet another episode of And Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Columbia Association, and our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the Internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back on April 20th with special guest Paul Lemley, the president of the Howard County Teachers Union, and another 40 minutes of news and commentary. We hope you join us.